Bill 610, I'd like to note the presence of legislators in Juneau. Would Juneau, would you come in, please?
Morning, John. This is John Ringstead.
This is Rip Van Kopenen. Hi, John.
Hi. Glad that you're there. Present here is Representative Ewling and myself. It's 10:09 a.m. March.
I'll see you later.
We have had testimony on this bill numerous times, and Representative Furness will be here momentarily. He called and said he'd be a few minutes late this morning. And anyway, we have witnesses.
Oh, yeah, on the table there. Just so I can mark
it. Yeah, we have a witness list. The people here to testify, I think in late November is when this bill was written after a number of hearings were conducted by House Labor and Commerce Committee. We held some in Ketchikan and Fairbanks, and anyway, the purpose of the legislation is to try to reduce the number of contractors who operate in Alaska without a state contractor's license or operate illegal. And doing heavy construction season, in the last few years when things, the economy of the state hasn't been as good in Alaska, it's been quite a lure.
Oh, my wool shirt?
No, I've got my sweatshirt in there, but I had to take it off.
Cut rate.
If I'd known you were coming, I'd have bought another cake.
Oh, that's all right.
Yum.
Prices and substandard quality of work and cutting out the local contractors that have tried to operate in the state and try to operate legal creates quite a hardship a bit. We're trying to address this in legislation. Yeah, I note the presence of Representative Furness this time.
That's the worst reason for trying
to. Can go just down through the list. I'd also like
to
welcome,
legislate to protect the public.
4-H student
that they understand.
You know, observing this,
legislate to protect
welcome you
other
to,
businessmen. They don't understand
a little bit of the way government works, and
they're on their way, John. They're not here yet, but they'll be here momentarily.
Okay, maybe you'd make note when they're. I thought they were up in your committee room.
They're supposed to be on their way up. We
you
saw them down,
here,
down the way a little bit ago.
Well, perhaps
when they get here.
Good.
They get here, you can let us know. Yeah, the first person in Anchorage here to testify would take testimony from Bill McNall.
Good old Bill.
McNall.
N-A-U-L-T. No.
Would you state your name and your affiliation for the record, please, and please state your testimony.
We don't hear the testimony, huh?
Wait. Oh, could you tell when we're not, wait. We don't hear it. No. That's not what they're doing.
This has to be the mic because you can hear the moderator.
The testifying mic is not working.
There's no start over. It's not going to be recorded. Oh,
what?
All the talking we're doing is being recorded.
Good. Well, go back and start over.
This is John Ringstead. Are we not online here?
We will back up here. We'll maybe just start from scratch. Would you state your name for the record, please?
Yes. My name is Bill McNall.
Can
you hear me?
Are you copying now?
Yeah, that's better.
Yes, we can hear him.
My name is Bill McNall. I'm an attorney that practices here in Anchorage, Alaska. I handle two types of litigation. Primarily, I handle defective real estate matters for the consumer, be they condominium owner or home purchaser, or occasionally somebody who's attempting to sell their house and discovers they have problems with sale. I'd like to point out to the members of the panel this morning that the Anchorage Daily News has a headline in section E called Builders Come Under Scrutiny for Bad Work, an article by Jim Erickson, which addresses some of the issues that you folks are dealing with now. In my practice over the last 5 years, I've encountered numerous situations where the home purchaser or the buyer of professional services has defective work done and discovers after the work has been repaired that the builder will not fix the work, or the builder for that matter may not be, we can't find the builder, he simply left the state. There's no license, there's no bond, or for that matter the bond is inadequate. I think that this bill moves and that you are taking testimony on today moves in the appropriate direction in light of the fact that you're increasing the bonding amount to $10,000. The $5,000 bond has been around for a long time. 10 years ago, you could buy a home in Anchorage, Alaska for $30,000 or $40,000. That same house today will cost you $150,000, but the bonds remained at $5,000. 2 years ago, I testified on a similar hearing, a hearing similar to this one, that I felt the bond should be raised to $20,000. The reason for that is that any slight defect, if it's a wet basement where you have to pull the foundation, the dirt away from the foundation, retar the basement, fix the interior of the property to its original condition, you're talking more than $5,000, and for the most part, you're talking more than $10,000. I've had cases where I've had repair bids that range between $10,000 and $76,000 on the same problem. I don't understand the discrepancy, but we go out and hire professional contractors to give us estimates of repair, and I get that type of discrepancy. Sometimes it's because some of the professional contractors we hire to try to do these things aren't experienced Alaska contractors. They're new, they're up from Oregon, they're up from Washington, they're up from California. I think your bill also addresses a couple of other issues that we have in the legal profession. There are problems that the legal profession experiences. Number one, you make it mandatory that if the builder refuses to come up with the documentation, the drawings, the plans, the dollars involved in the transaction, that he can be made to pay for the basically an audit of his work. That is, as far as I'm concerned, a very critical matter. Oftentimes, I'm in a situation where the builder says he can't find the work order, he can't find his checks, he can't find this, he can't find that. I would, however, point out that I think that there is one weakness in the bill, and that is that there's no requirement that these folks prove they are able to do the work that they're getting registered for. I would ask that the panelists consider a licensing test similar to what California has. That were administered quarterly, we would avoid the problem of a builder coming up from the state of Oregon, where their economy is very depressed, slapping a builder sign on the side of his car, getting a bond, getting registered as a builder, and go out because he's financially strapped and underbidding remodeling jobs or other sort of structural work, getting the money, paying off his bills because he's still financially strapped, taking on more work than he can handle, ultimately not doing a good job, doing a shoddy job, or not doing the work at all. Gentlemen, I've handled cases involving $1 million in problems, I've handled cases involving $3,000 or $4,000 in problems, and I've probably handled client contacts in excess of 70 or 80 a year. I am one attorney in one office in the state of Alaska. This is not a small problem, this is a very major problem. I get contacts from Mat-Matsu Valley, I get contacts from Kenai, I get contacts from Fairbanks, I get contacts occasionally from Southeastern. I've had other attorneys call me and ask me to assist them with their problems because it's kind of a unique area of law. You're talking warranty law, you're talking breach of contract, you're talking tort or misrepresentation problems. The spillover effect that comes out of this is the real estate industry itself pays prices. If there's a problem with the house and the agent sells that house, the agent can get sued for misrepresentation. The builder can be off the hook because the agent may have to pick up the cost of that problem. Now, it's I think, a realistic approach, but I think it's the initial step. I think the bond amount is too low. I would encourage you to, I know it's a substantial step to go from 5 to 10, and I appreciate that you're doing that. But if you look at the problem, the cost of repairs that we're encountering these days, particularly in Anchorage right now, I think the bond amount is still there. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Red State Furnace. assure competency, and can there be a series of tests designed so as to really do that? Now, I understand California does have some work in that area, and I believe the state of Oregon also does some work in that area. The intent initially was to stay away from the competency and let's put together a good basic bill as a framework, and perhaps with some experience on this, and look more directly into the bonding issues on two that we toyed with, and there have been some recommendations to set it at 100,000, 50,000. Because of the cost of that, I understand a $5,000 bond now costs $750. The raise is just $10,500, so it has a tendency to increase in income. One of the other reasons is to not to discourage new person in the industry. We're well aware that we probably have several thousand new contractors coming online on an annual basis. Some of these who have the competency, some who have the necessary financial backing in order to pay the bonding, get the license, and all these things. But some do not. It's a judgment question, so it's a philosophical question. That's what it was all.
Well, I appreciate that it is a philosophical question, but the reality to the consumer, is that the fallout of a man not being able to come up with the money for a bond means that he's probably not going to have any money to do any repair work or pay the judgment that the consumer may ultimately get. And if we don't stop the problem at the front end, then my consumer, after he's gone to court and got the judgment for $30,000, winds up having a piece of paper that has no meaning to him, because there was never any requirement that builder not only be licensed, be responsible professionally that way, but be financially responsible for the quality of his work. As it stands right now, and I think Connie Sipe has addressed the issue in this morning's paper, the building industry is the only industry that can get away with the lack of integrity that it has. No other professional industry that I'm aware of has the same magnitude of problem the building industry has, whether it's economics or whatever the other problems are. We have to live with that, because it's the AHFC money that finances these programs. It's the consumers here that live with these problem homes. It's a real estate industry here that has to keep selling these problem homes. And it's an ongoing problem that I think could be eliminated at least partially if somebody up front would make these builders be more responsive.
Thank you. We contacted some people in California who have went and faced the same problems in the past, and I've asked them to send us some documents to how they've handled. I suppose they have greater worse problems than we do in various areas that we're talking. And our next hearing, perhaps, we're going to try to get into the offices down there to see how they have handled right on talking to contractors. So one question that came up and of concern at the hearings, I think we've heard a lot of concern about raising costs to the legal contractors doesn't solve the problem. The ones that are trying to operate legally, it only puts a further burden on them, and that it doesn't solve anything to the unlicensed contractor, because if he's going to operate illegal, he could put all kinds of burdens. He's not going to conform to it, and I can appreciate your problem as a consumer, but in a sense, the legal contractors, I guess, are consumers involved in this, and we're making legislation that they have to conform to. So
if you were a contractor that said to me as a consumer, I'm going to charge you on top of the price of your house of $150,000, another $1,000 to cover all the bonding that I have to come up with for your home, and that way you know there's enough money here if there's any problem. My subs make a mistake, I make a mistake, that money will be here to protect you. Gentlemen, I guarantee you I would be delighted to pay that last $1,000.
Well, I hope that's the feeling of the whole community, but we will try to address that problem. Thank you.
For his comment. I'm not sure if the chairman had a chance to relay, but the way we got into it is there were some 2,000 contractors, state interest in this bill came from the community. Very little has come from the legislators themselves. It felt so strongly that the community is the one that protects it. So you persons who are there are the ones that know their unlicensed contact is the people who really get hurt. The home buyer that goes to buy the house to find out the next week after the closed loan is there's a foot of water in the basement. And we really try to reach this. It's not a perfect document. All the input that we're receiving now, we have to strip. Appreciate your comments.
Thank you, guys. I would like to close with just one more comment, if I might. Gentlemen, I've had people sit in my office, a husband and wife, who have invested every dime they have in a home. They now are told it's going to take $20,000 to fix it. And it's a substantial defect in the house, foundations cracking or whatever else it might be. They don't have the money to fix it. They can't sell the house because nobody will finance it again. Okay, and they can't live in the home because the defect's so severe. Now, they are looking at financial ruin if they walk away from that home. But more importantly, I've watched the interaction between the husband and the wife on the other side of my desk. Gentlemen, I have seen a divorce occur as they're told the bad news. No bond, contractor's gone, nobody will fix it, bank won't touch it, you're stuck. I can't fix it for you. If they're there to see me because they've been referred to me as somebody that knows this area, I have to tell them there's no solution. And gentlemen, sometimes marriages can't stand that stress. And over the last 5 years, I can tell you that I probably see 10 divorces occur in my office when I tell people that that's the answer to their problem. There is no
answer. I'm sure, in all fairness, that all of these wasn't victimized by unlicensed contractors. Some were licensed that were. And we're trying to address the problem. It's a very complex problem.
Certainly is. I appreciate the gentleman's effort. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question here. Is it Representative Copeland?
Yes, Representative Copeland.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the comments made was on the need for some sort of examination on licensure. Would perhaps the issuance of a provisional license, either for a period of a year or pending the completion of a certain number of successful contracts or a certain dollar volume of contracts, be a good substitute for an examination? And a pencil and paper examination doesn't often really show how well a contractor can organize his work, get it done properly and supervised. It would seem that the proof is in the pudding with the successful completion of a certain number of jobs. And then people might be able also to go to a licensed contractor who's completed that and might be charging higher fees, or might go to a provisionally licensed contractor and take their chances, but for a slightly lower cost.
My observation, sir, that I think that's giving some of the contractors I've dealt with more credit than they're due. I've seen contracts that are totally unintelligible. You can't decipher the meaning of them. You can't read them. The words that are used are either inappropriate or misspelled to the point where you don't know what is being said. You don't know what is being agreed to. And just like you folks had the problem with the garages here in town that we're not putting out bids, we're changing bid prices afterwards. You came on with a very strong piece of legislation that required them to submit written bids to start with, and the bids had to contain certain requirements, and they couldn't deviate from those, and you had to return the parts, defective parts or the worn out parts. I think that sort of an approach, making sure these people know what a contract consists of, are able to read plans, are able to commit themselves in writing to particular things, and have some basic literacy would be probably a more fundamental starting point than some real serious alternative licensing scheme or even some real complex testing requirements. The problem is much more basic than that, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to make note to everyone out there, we've got the network till a few minutes before one, so if we could be concise, we'd appreciate it then with our testimony and questions. We got a large number of witnesses to testify. The next one here in Anchorage, then we'll go out on the network, is Mr. Walter Garner.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, John.
We've been
been joined by our group of people down here, and I just thought I'd let you know that we do have a whole crowd of, I don't know, 30 or 40 of them here that are listening and trying to see how we run our teleconference system here.
Well, I would like to make welcome all the 4-H students there, and hopefully you bear with us, and we're going an electronic means of holding some hearings here, and hope you have gained some knowledge from it.
My name is Walter Gardner, G-A-R-D-N-E-R. I'm an electrical consultant living here in Anchorage. I'm also a member of the Municipal Building Board, and I would like to comment, if I may, Mr. Chairman, on some of the comments of the bill. One of the comments is under the original bill, it asked for the Builders Board to provide investigative services to any or all of the boards, the accountants, the construction contractors, chiropractors. I see no reason for this at all. There are a number of administrative or typographical errors in there, particularly under 08.01070, administrative duties of the board. They need some designations on it. A similar section in section 10, the numbers are incorrect. In section 13, under the new article 08.18.120, parent 2, I would request that the word or be deleted in the second sentence and substitute the word and to allow for at least one electrical specialist to be on board. That's section 13 of the bill. This is on page 4. We're at the bottom line. Page 29. Line 29. It says, one of the plumbing specialists or electrical specialists. Another question I would like to pose before the board is, or for the committee, is why was the insurance and bond requirements canceled in 08-18-121, section 21? The majority of the statement would be applicable, except to the Commissioner of Labor. Now, this was the old bill, and it was deleted on line 11 of page 7. The section, the complete section is being appealed, and my review earlier, the majority of the statement would be applicable in the old bill. Another question I'd like to pose before the committee is this board being established and is for the purpose of being used as a board of appeals or a board of review? Also, code interpretation. This is another problem area that we've had. If not, why not? And why are the lien rights being included in this bill for 3435.069A? Is it the intent to use the Builders Board to adjudicate lien rights? And the last question I have is where is the money for the checking and the enforcement of the contractors being, number one, is the investigators. Right now, the Department of Commerce has one investigator. They need 10. Also, the enforcement. Where's the money coming for the enforcement? I noticed that the bill does not direct itself or lend itself to any monetary consideration. It does wonders, and it's a beautiful bill. I love the bill as it is. It has many merits. It's a start. It's not a finish. It's a start. And I have to compliment Mr. Burness and Ms. Cowdery and Julie on some of the stuff that just went into the work. That's all I have.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate your time. like to ask all the committee members who've got a message here that they please watch for my cabin so that make sure the button for the testifying is up, and we've asked to have probably or difficulty hearing recording from a rest day furnace.
I think Mr. Chairman might be responding to you mentioned the chairman hearing there are no monetary considerations. Whatever your right goes or not, the honest don't have any good explanation as to why they're not. One of the things we'll take back as a result of this hearing is only on today, we'll investigate the feasibility of putting in some kind of money. The question concerning where does the money is coming from, who hires the investigators to carry out the intent of the deal. Well, you all know there are the contractor fees that go into the state plans. These fees ideally should be used to offset the cost. One of the problems with identifying fees and identifying the expenses in operation is that we cannot dedicate funds within state government. All monies received go into the general fund. The Department of Commerce, through occupational license, has a budget. There's no correlation. Biggest problem, well, we don't have sufficient enforcement as it is now. And hopefully one of the things the bill can do is to reemphasize and put additional focus on these people out there inspecting these projects. You're right, I think it's only the tip of the iceberg, a lot of things need to be included. This is another comment. What we've done again is taken the comments from the citizens that have had input in this. We've asked the legislative drafter to take those concerns, put them in a bill form, to use other guides for additional discussion. Therefore, there are a number of limits. You asked the question concerning is this a board of appeal? I actually can't answer that question for you. It's a good question, one that we need to again look more closely at. Is it a board of enforcing something or a board of appeal or whatever? And I would think we want a happy balance between the two. But then we need to make that more specific. Have a number of other questions. Yeah, just to answer those.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, Ms. Furness, one of the problems that I see at the present time, and this is one of the steps towards it, under the present situation that the state has in their enforcement, it has been my recommendation and for a number of years to take the inspection authority out from underneath the Department of Labor and put it under a separate Department of Commerce where it belongs under the licensing. Whereas at the present time, using the Board of Appeals type thing, I happen to sit on the Municipal Board of Appeals, the Examiners of Appeals, where we have the different disciplines for when the appeals come in, we have all the various disciplines in it. Under the present situation right now, we have under the Department of Labor as it's set up, and I stand to be corrected if this is not correct, but it appears that the Department of Labor and their inspection authority, example is that the electrical, of which I'm most committed, is we have a state electrical inspector who reports to a boiler pressure vessel inspector, and the boiler pressure vessel inspector has veto powers over the electrical inspector under the present situation. Now, I am opposed to this under a Board of Appeals where a contractor who is then problem area with his whatever problem he has with the attorneys or whatever can go to a Board of Appeals, and when a commissioner, assistant commissioner, chairman overrules, then it can go to the Board of Appeals where they have knowledgeable people involved in the decisions involved in. That's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Ewing. If
thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think Mr. Gardner has some very good points here. I think just a comment, this is just a working kind of draft that we're kind of working with to come up with a solution. From the testimony that we took during the interim period, we went to Fairbanks and we're here in Anchorage and I know down in the southeast to get an input. And the problem, again, was in the enforcement section. I'd really like to see us work on that section of enforcement if possible through the chairman. Thank you.
Thank you. Are any questions on the committee in Juneau?
No, thank you. It was very interesting testimony, but no questions.
Okay, thank you. At this time, I'd like to go to Matt Sue on the network to Mr. Bob Johnson, president of the Alaska State Home Builders. Bob, are you there?
Yes, sir. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I listened to Mr. Gardner talk, and I quite agree with him. The Alaska State Home Builders' concern on this bill is, as he stated very emphatically, is the enforcement. The state has been very, very lax in enforcing any of the laws that are presently on the books. This was not, as far as the home builders was designed, the bill is not aimed at the electrical or the highway specialist. It was through the consumer complaints that we have talked to Chairman Furness to instigate a bill where we can get some kind of enforcement on the people that are coming up here and working without licensing. I think there should be a provision in the bill. However, I don't know if I've overlooked it. On the application for the licenses, they should state on there, have you ever had another name or a license under another name in the state of Alaska when people apply for licensing, and make it under a perjury count if they don't answer that in a truthful way. The reason I'm stating this is that we have quite a few people in the state of Alaska that have walked off of jobs, left owing large sums of money, and building shoddy houses, and which I'm mostly concerned with, and then coming back in under a different name and being issued new licenses. I think this is a very touchy subject with a lot of people around the state. I just got back from Ketchikan with a meeting of the builders down there, and this is one that was brought up very strongly, along with the enforcement of the laws that are in this bill or the laws that are already on the books. I think that's about all that I had to say. I do feel that we need to do something about the licensing practices and the enforcement in the state of Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. I would hope that perhaps on a committee redraft of the bill or that we could get participation from the home builders in some of the areas in this. And I appreciate your time to testify. Representative Ewing is...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Bob, for your comments. I certainly agree with you on the enforcement section. We've got plenty of laws on the books right now, and we can't seem to enforce them in any way, shape, or form. Just a couple things. What's your feeling about the present board, the board that's in the bill? I guess I'm a little concerned about establishing a whole other board unless it's really going to do something. Are we going to be just extending government, or are we really going to accomplish something from that board? What's your feeling about that?
I talked to our industry rep on this, and my personal feeling about establishing a new board, I have a little misgivings about the buildup of the board as far as having a highway specialist or all on the board. I don't think we need another board. What we need is enforcement of the current laws and possibly a committee to meet every once in a while to review the enforcement.
Very good. I appreciate those comments. That's very good.
Thank you. Any other questions of committee members of Mr. Johnson? Yeah, Representative Furness.
Mr. Johnson, I apologize. I'm wearing about three different hats. I was out of the room for most of your testimony. You mentioned the fact of starting up a new board. The Department of Commerce has also voiced concern of starting up a new board. The rationale, perhaps, for doing that is if you want attention to something, you need to identify a dedicated group of persons that this is one of their prime functions. is to coordinate and see that the intent of the legislation is carried out. Most occupational boards are costing in the neighborhood of about $50,000 to $70,000 a year. In our economy, that's not a tremendous amount of money, and it seems to be a good expenditure of the dollars, particularly if they can draw attention to the need for additional enforcement and be that community-based group that tells the Department of Commerce or the Department of Labor or the legislature that we're not doing the job. We know we're not doing the job. The fact is there's no consumer out there in position of power that says we ought to be providing the dollars and for those inspections. So I see it as an avenue to draw more attention to that and to assure that we get those coverages.
May I add something to my testimony here? The electrical people in the Matsu Valley are inspected by a state inspector, as is their plumbing. The problem is, along with not having any inspectors for housing and that, we're short enough electrical inspectors in this area. The man that is doing the job up here has probably an area the size of Delaware to cover and one man to do it. And as you all know, the Matsu Valley is experiencing a very large building boom right now. We need more inspectors. This is another thing that is a very touchy subject with the consumers in that. When it comes to time to get the projects up and they're waiting for an inspector on the electrical projects. Again, enforcement is very, very strong portion of the Alaska State Home Builders on the licensing fee. Thank you.
Thank you. We have, is Mike Butcher there or Ray Agin? If they are, we perhaps get them up now to testify.
Mr. Agin is going to testify right now.
Okay, Mr. Agin.
Mr. Chairman, I find up here in the Matsu Valley, all the time there's someone that is wiring houses without a license. Now, the builder himself hires this person to do this. It could be his brother, brother-in-law, uncle, whatever. Now, this is all right as long as this house is not subject for resale. This is in the electrical contracting bill already established. Now we have no one to get out on the job and find out who these people are, and even if they do find them, there's no way to penalize these people for doing it. Now this board is supposed to be able to penalize these people for doing this work, and if a builder that is driving down the road sees an electrical contractor or a painter or a plumbing contractor on this job, he may take the man's license number down, for an example, and find out who the man is, send it into this board, and this board will review the project. Why is this man working there? Does he have a license? And if he does not, then we will be able to make a citation for this man and fine him in some way. That's all I have to say for the moment.
Thank you. Any questions, the committee? Thank you. This is Representative Furness.
Yes. Mr. Agin, yes. As you well know, the bill does require here, at least provide a mechanism, that if you as a contractor or whatever see a person out working without the proper licensing and funding, that the board is the proper body to fill that complaint, and they're under obligation to take an action. I note here that they can impose is a civil penalty not to exceed $1,000 for each violation. And so at least the bill addresses your concern.
Thank you. Any other questions of the committee? Okay, thank you. Is Mr. Butcher there?
He feels that his concerns have been met, so we'll defer comment. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Perhaps we come back here to Anchorage at this time. I notice Mr. Carlisle is here. Would he care to testify at this time? Okay, thank you. Scott Knott from Unit Company? Dick?
My name is Dick Catno. I'm Vice President with Unit Company. We are a general contractor, and consequently, we are covered by this bill as I read it. We are also a member of AGC, and AGC's views have already been addressed, and I would like to suggest at this time that we wholeheartedly concur with those views. We've been in business in the Anchorage area for about 8 years. We've done projects from size of the extension of the Diamond Mall, building the Anglo Energy building, stores for cars, Godstein. We are a commercial general contractor. We commend this committee for the noble purpose that they're setting about to cover in this bill, but we feel that the bill itself is flawed and that in the way it's drafted, it brings everybody that is a general contractor, such as ourselves, into this bill, yet it really doesn't seem to address us. It has concerns, and in the testimony I've heard, talking to some of the legislators, the concerns are really in the residential area, not the commercial area, yet the bill addresses everybody as being equal, and I would like to suggest that there are differences. In terms of bonding, it is not uncommon. As a matter of fact, it is almost mandatory in our business that we bond dollar for dollar. If it's a $10 million project, we bond $10 million. We certainly wouldn't have any problems with raising the bonding limits in this. As a matter of fact, a $150,000 home, if you're looking for protection, then perhaps there's nothing wrong with the builder putting up a $150,000 bond. That does provide the protection. It does cost. But if we're after the protection, then we can provide it through that mechanism. We obviously have some concerns with the licensing procedure that's been suggested. I think that also is flawed, and we stand on the projects we've built, the quality of our construction, and to say now we would have to go through a licensing procedure at this point, doesn't stand to reason why that should have to be done. We don't feel that this bill, as it's presently drafted, is concerned with us, yet it does bring us into its auspices. And in fact, somebody could file a complaint against us, and the commissioner could say, we're going to audit your books. And I don't see the purpose of that. I don't see what's gained by that, even if it's looking only at the residential building. I think that there's some things here that somebody was overambitious. As I say, I commend the committee for what they're trying to do, and I'm not sure that this is the appropriate vehicle to get it done, and I'm not sure that the concerns can be addressed statewide in the state law when the needs of the communities are significantly different. At this point, I guess that's all the testimony I have. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Dick. Your comments about residential versus commercial, I appreciate that. I've been in the business here for a number of years myself. And I was wondering if you could help us out, or could you give us some guidance perhaps in some of the redrafting of some of this so we could distinguish between the two in the legislation, perhaps address, certainly is a real problem out there in the residential area, probably more so than it is in the commercial area, like the saving of the money. But if that's a question that we've been trying to do some soul searching on to distinguish between the two, and we would appreciate it if you could give us some help on that.
Be happy to work.
Representative Furness.
Chairman, I note that the AGC, through their attorney, Bill Reeves, is here to provide some comments, of which we've had before. One of the intents, Mr. Cardinal, as you well know, was not to include those contractors who are primarily doing business in the commercial entity. You've already made note that there is oftentimes adequate surety and performance bonding that follows that project over a period of time, and that appears to be adequate. There may be a gray line where a general contractor who is primarily doing business in the commercial contractor in turn does build a residential structure, get into a condo unit or whatever. And so there may be some overlapping. I think we need to be sensitive to that. But even in those instances, if the contractor normally does business in a commercial entity, chances are the funding, the financial resources and reputation, expertise are there in place. Therefore, there shouldn't be a major amount of problems in the whatever overlap there may be.
I would agree with you, there shouldn't be. But the needs of the two, to give you a client, to build a 400-unit condominium project, it is our reputation that's on stake, and we would have the adequate bonding in place. And of course, you gentlemen know that in the municipality of Anchorage, at least in the Anchorage Bowl, building code is so stringent that we really don't have the problems of quality construction or the problems of being addressed in this bill as they have in some of the outlying areas. Would we be drawn into this then because we do this as an ancillary project, or would we have to reapply, take the test if we wanted to build such a project? I think those are legitimate concerns that we would have. It is our livelihood, and we've been in business for 8 years and we'd like to be in business for 40 or 50 more. We pride ourselves on the fact that we do quality construction, and we point with pride to the projects we've done. We don't have any problem with licensing. We are licensed. I would say we have a problem with putting our license number on our vehicle. I don't see what that accomplishes other than the enforcement as was suggested, somebody riding down the road and taking down the number and checking it out. I don't know how prevalent that is, but it would cost everybody money to comply with that, and I don't know if that isn't maybe overkill, but then again, I'm not as sensitive to the problems in the residential market as I am to the problems in the commercial market. We have carpetbaggers, outsiders coming up, building, beat us out on bid. Some of them stay, some of them leave without their pocketbook after a couple of years, and the enforcement usually is adequate bonding behind them. You have to show that they've got the financial wherewithal to perform the job. And that seems to be the marketplace then taking care of the problem. And it seems to work quite well. We don't really have those problems in commercial buildings that are being addressed here, at least in the Anchorage market. I'm not suggesting that maybe they don't exist outside, and I certainly can't speak.
Thank you, Dick. Any comments or questions from the committee of Dick? Okay, thank you, Dick. I'd like to get Mr. John Sewell up now, if you could, from here in Anchorage, and then we'll go to the outlying area.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is John Sewell, S-E-A-W-E-L-L. I'm representing Rogers and Babbler, general contractor that's been operating in Alaska since 1949, based in Anchorage since the early 50s. I'm also representing the Alaska Chapter of Associated General Contractors, whom I've been a director since sometime in the late 60s. And I'm also speaking for myself, a long-time and very opinionated Alaskan, thinks that we are spending much too much time and money generating new legislation and new regulation, and not enough enforcing what good legislation and regulation we have in place. Most of the comments that I wanted to make to you have been very well covered by Mr. Johnson of the Home Builders. I support his comments wholeheartedly, and other speakers. As Mr. Kavanaugh said, we're very concerned, Rogers and Babbler, for instance, has been doing $50 or $60 million as annual volume in highways and airports and sewage treatment plants and fish hatcheries and even some schools that you've heard about that has some design problems. I regret to say that part of the business, the commercial part of the business, is not your concern. We're sure of that. And we want to be very sure that if you do come up with a bill that resembles what you're working on now, that the commercial business, which does a pretty good job of policing itself through bonding companies, bonding requirements, architects and engineers, want to be sure that the commercial aspect of the business is excluded. I have a real concern about the board and what value would come from a board. I have a great fear of a board that's such as is contemplated here ultimately trying to determine qualifications of contractors. We're addressing primarily the residential business, and particularly in home repair and smaller work, the requirements of the contract are in the eyes of the consumer, the user, and try to set up standards other than what we already provide with building code. For me to buy or for you to buy at home can turn into a Pandora's box at one point. Anyhow, I question that we need the board. I think we need to use what we have in terms of licensing laws. The one thing, to reiterate what other people have said, that I support wholeheartedly and our company supports wholeheartedly in the industry you're trying to address, we don't begin to have enough bonding requirements. Now, personally, I think that instead of 5 and 10,000, we should have a minimum of 50,000 and 100,000. And the bonding companies will do a great deal of the policing. They're very well qualified on the qualifications of the contractors. Another aspect that really needs to be addressed in this problem, I think, is consumer education. You can generate 100 boards, but you can't, through a board, teach the consumer to be wary of that fellow that knocks on his door. Consumer education is an important part of it, if not the most important part of it, in my opinion. I think that pretty well covers what I had on my mind, gentlemen.
Thank you. Thank you, John. I agree that on your comments that the bonding certainly takes care of problem, takes care of some pretty good scrutinizing before you can get bonds, but to handle problems is that great. But I think this, we're trying to address the smaller contractors, and I know back when Walter Hickel was running against for governor the first time, a concern of some of the community, the business community, small business community, that brought to my attention was at that time that I conveyed to him was the problems, difficulty of getting bonds. A lot of people haven't, maybe they're bondable, but they find it very difficult to get. And I complained to him, and he come back with me that he couldn't even get bonded. So he didn't know how he's going to solve pressure a bonding company into bonding someone that didn't want a bond, that he had never had a bond. So bonding is a problem. I don't know if it's a solution to this problem or not. Sam Ewing.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. John, you talked about the $50,000 bond. How does that relate back to the consumer? Does that mean that they're protected against damages up to $50,000 in something that has constructed houses built, or how does that relate?
Yeah, the consumer would have recourse against it. Against the contractor's bonding company if they bonding companies are very reluctant to pay contractors' bills. I don't really care who they're bonding. The bonding companies set out to make sure the contractors pay their own bills. The bonding company is a pretty good policeman itself, as far as seeing to the contractors pay their own bills.
So the consumer then would be protected up to that amount of money on the bond, or even above that. Or let's say it's $150,000 bond. Essentially, would the consumer, the person who bought the house, be protected? Would that relate?
Well, if the contractor has, let's say, $100,000 bond posted with the state, and if he builds five $100,000 houses, so as far as his customers are concerned, there's a $500,000 exposure, but his bonding company has a limit of $100,000 exposure.
If I may, chances, though, that if somebody built a sold $200,000 house,
might
that
$20,000 problem.
Yeah, they have a $20,000 problem. $30,000, it probably
right.
Wouldn't be a $200,000 problem.
That's
there's
right.
Always some value left there. The property's still there.
That's right. But as the attorney that spoke here first this morning said, it's a relatively simple matter for an incompetent contractor that's working it. Your block today, and in your block tomorrow, and in your block the next day, to generate tens of thousands of dollars worth of problems in a fairly short span of time. You know, I strongly support higher bonding requirements and enforcement of what we have.
Well, enforcement, I'd note on the for the record too that we don't have. We look to the Department of Labor to enforce a lot of the regulations that's on, and I don't believe that we've had representatives of the Department of Labor at the last two hearings, this one or the one before. And I'd contacted the Department of Labor. I know we have laws on the books that says if a person's unlicensed, you're not obligated to pay if he's not legally in the state. And just that matter, if it was made more aware, would probably alert unlicensed people to beware, because they may be out there working for nothing, because they legally have no obligation to pay them if they're not operating legal in the first place. And I'd ask the Department of Labor to perhaps emphasize that or get that across the public, and have been successful. Yes. Thank you, John.
Thank you, John.
We have, I'd like to make note, too, that there's other commitments for this teleconference, so it'll end at 1 o'clock. So, but anyway, I'd like to go at Dillingham at this time. If there anyone, Gordon, Isaacs, are you there to testify?
Yeah, this is Gordon Isaac here. I've been sitting here listening to this. Does everyone hear me out there?
Yeah, you're coming in fine, Gordon.
Okay, I just have a few comments. I sort of agree with several of the other comments that we need enforcement of the present laws probably more than we need additional laws. Which may or may not be enforced any better than the ones we already have. Another comment I have is that the major intent of this bill seems to be to protect the consumers, and I feel that inspections of work done may protect consumers more than taking a test. Taking a test does not necessarily indicate competency. There's all kinds of companies around the nation specializing in guaranteeing people that they can pass a test. You can go to a three-day school and be guaranteed that you'll pass the test, or you don't have to pay. Just taking a written test does not guarantee competency. undue hardship in the smaller communities, where the smaller the community, the more difficult it is to have all the requirements of everyone being licensed to do every bit of work they do. And while I'm sure the larger communities, it's more necessarily, I'm not sure that the very small communities really need the same regulation as the large community. I guess that's all my comments this time.
Thank you, Gordon. We appreciate it. I'd like to make note of the people that heard the horns blowing. If they did, that wasn't a wedding. I think that was the parade of the Alaska, or the IBEW's parade that's going on here in Anchorage at this time. Representative Furness.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Eisen. One of the ideas that surfaces under the legislation, we may exempt communities of 2,500 persons or less, realizing that oftentimes it's very difficult to comply to some of these areas in small communities. So that leaves a possibility on this legislation.
Thank you, Representative Furness.
Yes, Mr. Chairman Cowdery, this is Representative Barb Locker. Could I just make a short statement, please?
Sure, Barbara. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you. I have sat in on several of your hearings, and Representative Furness has said that the request for this legislation has come from the builders and from people. And it seems like most of the testimony does come on behalf of the consumers. And I would like to say that at this point, being that the legislature did not actually initiate this legislation, I think it's time that this committee start listing at least the goals of this legislation. And if you've done that, I'd kind of like to hear those now. What is it exactly that we hope to accomplish now that we've had these hearings and now that we hear from legislators, builders, contractors, and consumer advocates?
Well, certainly we're trying to come up to solutions that to the problems that consumers in your district, I would certainly, as well as all over the state, that we have people that coming in here from out of state, unlicensed, or are doing sub-quality work, charging people that's maybe unaware of the situation, and then leaving without any recourse to the people to go to, except to go get a qualified person to redo the job. And so what we're trying to address is a very complex issue that we don't burden the responsible people or contractors, but to try to clear up the problem for the ones that are not responsible. And hopefully that we would welcome your effort in solutions, as well as any other legislator, to this problem that's a real problem. Representative Furness, do you have any comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Perhaps I just made a note here. You mentioned the goals. I'm sure the goals are there, but the intent was to address some concerns, and I think we're all still in the process of trying to determine what those concerns actually are. The bill represents a accumulation of the concerns that we heard from the three previous meetings, those being in Fairbanks, Ketchikan, and in Anchorage. There are other concerns that have been voiced here today, and I would assume that if we go through and amend the bill, take some things out, put some things in, again, trying to address the concerns that we're hearing coming from the private sector.
Thank you, Representative Furness. At this time, I'd like to get Mr. Bob West to testify, please. Would you state your name and affiliation and make sure the mic switches up? Yeah.
My name is Robert West. I'm a owner and Senior Vice President of Construction Rigging Incorporated. We've been a contractor in Alaska for all about about 15 years. I've been here about 23 years in the construction industry. We're primarily a bridge and dock contractor, and we do build hospitals, remodel hospitals, and we would possibly build a house. And the way we are set up, we're a bonded commercial contractor. I don't think we afford ourselves to even build a house for me, for myself, because of the, we are a commercial contractor. I think what you're trying to address here is a consumer problem, and you're not really addressing the consumer. You're addressing a contractors that can bond, can bid large projects and throwing them in with remodeling contractors. I believe what is more needed here, what I'm trying to say, if you try to bond a contractor to $100,000 and that man has to come up with the financial assets to have the bonding company bond him, the house builder is never going to afford him. You're going to have the same situation you have now. Housing is so high now, you can't afford a licensed union contractor to build a house. That's probably immaterial of the situation here, but I'm just trying to say that the commercial contractors are well policed. You may ask the Department of Transportation or the state of Alaska harbors and buildings. They police us very well. In fact, they penalize us if we don't do what we're supposed to do. I think the situation that needs to be addressed here is the consumer, and make the consumer more aware of what his rights are, not try to set up a new board to mediate between an owner and a contractor. I think that you become a mediator, possibly, and you entangle the state in legal proceedings. The board could be drawn into a legal proceeding with a homeowner against a contractor. I think the thing is it now if we now have the licensing requirements, if they are enforced, I don't think we need any more boards. We need strict enforcement of our laws, and possibly the consumer themselves being aware that they have a responsibility or possibly a liability to, if they want to remodel, if they get a permit to do so, and they show that the person they intend to do it with has a license. That's about all I have.
Well, thank you. I think that like your opinion on this, we could probably, in the amended version or committee substitute, whatever we come up with, have a figure of $250,000 or less that this legislation might value a project that it might affect. Or I don't know. I think that the feds have some jobs that don't require bonding up to a certain value, and perhaps it's just to throw it out for thought that we maybe can distinguish between residential and commercial by putting the dollar value, perhaps.
I think the federal is $10,000 right now, but it requires no bond. I can say again that it's very difficult for a individual to obtain a bond. You have to have quite a few assets, financial assets, to have a bonding company bond you. I think I recognize your name, Carly Bimo, I believe.
Yeah, it took me about 25 years to get to my little old bonding limit, so I know that it's not the easiest thing to do. I appreciate it. Any questions of Mr. West? Thank you, Mr. West. I see Bill Reeves here, but I think that he's, unless he wants to add some new testimony, he's next on the list. Okay. I think that probably what you was going to say was said the other day and has been repeated perhaps this morning. But I appreciate you coming down this morning, Bill.
Mr. Chairman, just one comment. Mr. Reeves has made some suggested amendments that will more clearly take out the general contractor. I believe it's intent in any committee substitute to take those on advice and put them in the committee substitute and make it available for a hearing.
Yes. But I appreciate you coming down this morning, Bill. The next person up is Mr. Vernon Griffin.
Yes, sir.
name is Vernon Griffin. I'm a consumer, private citizen. I had one of your contractors in my home. He worked 2.5 days. It's going to cost me about $28,000 to $30,000 to redo his work. He didn't finish his job. Little things like beating glue lambs in with a sledgehammer for exposed beams. Well, every stick of wood in the house has got to come out that he put in. I can't afford it, but I've got to. And I'd like to invite any and all of you people over there to look at it before we start again. It hurts. I've been living in this situation since 82. The contractors nowadays, everything's built for the contractors, nothing for the consumers. All they do is come in, mess up, tear up, and then go bankrupt. Now, where does that leave me? If I'm lucky and the bankruptcy judge does give me the bond, that doesn't even cover half of my attorney fees. This little $22,000 project is costing me in the neighborhood of $60,000 now. And the private citizens and homeowners can't afford that. You're going to have to start doing some testing of these people. I think you should test all contractors. I don't care how long they've been in business or how long they intend to stay. And they should be tested every time that they go up for license renewal. Put some responsibility on them people. That's about all I have to say. But I want to reiterate that I'd like to invite all of y'all over to my house to take a look at it.
I have been involved in dealings with contractors who went bankrupt myself and have taken a bath many times, and I've been here for 30 years, and I don't know exactly how we can legislate. I think that's bankruptcy is a very difficult thing that we can go in except through the bonding mechanism. And
we need to have them post performance bond well in excess of the estimate. They're going to have to start being tested on, first of all, see if they even know how to estimate. Start off with that, and then see if they can build.
I understand. I think that the whoever the contractor's doing the work has that option. If they want to require a bond, I think they can do that today for jobs.
I guarantee you, the next contractor to touch my house will post a performance bond well in excess of the...
I'm sure he will.
Yes, he will.
Any comments or questions from Mr.
How did you happen to come across this particular contractor? Did you request?
He came highly recommended from Mason's Associates.
From the what, sir?
A company here called Mason's Associates. I had called them out to do some concrete work, and they said they just did block work. They did not pour slabs or walls. And he recommended this contractor to me.
Is this gentleman licensed and
bonded? He was licensed, bonded, and insured.
How long had he been working in the state of Alaska? A
couple, 3 years, I understand.
Any questions, Mr. Griffin? Thank you, sir. Next, Mr. Storms, Mary? Would you state your name and affiliation, please, for the record?
Mary Storms with Pinion Associates. I'm in total support of this bill, whether in this form or another form. Definitely, I believe that we need a board. I believe that a lot of the discrepancies that the homeowners are running into, people like the settlement, my heart goes out to him. He's in his later years of his life. He goes through a simple little thing in his home. And It's destroyed his life for, what, 3-4 years. I believe that a board like this would deter contractors who are going out there with the full intent to rip somebody off, whether it be the homeowner or a contractor that maybe, for instance, a sub, maybe the contractor that he's working for, maybe the people that he's using out in the field. I have run into situations like that. Last year I was hurt very badly by that. I'm just getting started. I'm one woman alone. But I go out there and I work, and I don't get paid. The possibility that that if you do not conduct your business in an honorable manner, the possibility that if you do this, you lose your right to work in this state, I think that alone would deter a lot of people from going out with full intent. I've heard a couple of gentlemen say there's no problem in the commercial area. I would like to ask, why then do we have situations where, for instance, in my own situation, I did one day work in the month of July, 1984, on a commercial job, and was paid about 4 weeks ago. I don't have a big long line of credit. And that kind of stuff hurts. I have to pay my diesel bills, I have to pay my parts, I have to pay my labor. If I don't get paid, how am I going to pay? I don't have the money to go to a big attorney. They do. I have a lawsuit now against a contractor who dared to say, I know I have to pay her, but I'm not, but why pay her before I have to? Before I have to? What kind of comment is that? As far as going requiring contractors to post their license number, I'm for that. I have inquired, sir, are you licensed? Oh, yes. Sir, are you bonded? Oh, yes. Did I have a copy of that information, sir? Oh, well, it's over there. Later on, you find out there was a total lie. Those people who were conducting their business in an honorable manner, honest manner, should not be concerned with this bill. It would not hurt them. It will not change their business. Those people that are having problems dealing in a proper manner, I feel, they're going to object to any more so-called regulation.
Yes, Representative Furness.
Stone, what type of business do you have?
I own a dumpster.
And that's in the process of supplying about the labor and the use of the equipment you would not need for this long period of time.
Yeah, I find that I appreciate I'm sensitive to your problem because I've been in basically that same business, and I've found that in housing, in the residential, sometimes the carpet layer gets his money before I get my money, and I did the excavating in the first place, and it's pretty frustrating at times to work that out. But how, I don't know how we can make a person pay. I mean, by I know we had a bill last, it's not just a small person, a small contractor, the state of Alaska itself is very lax in paying their bills, and have a bill before the House right now, and actually having some opposition to requiring the state to pay their bills within 30 days after invoice. And if they don't, penalize them for it. Certainly, if you don't pay your bills, your gravel company that you buy your gravel wants them or penalize you for not paying your bill. But on the same token, the state is reluctant to pay theirs and say that it put a hardship on them if they had to pay within 30 days. And I don't understand. understand their rationale and not thinking it doesn't put a hardship on the public if they don't get paid in 30 days.
Well, a lot of us out in the field are trying to implement programs that perhaps we can help ourselves. For instance, I know of a couple of pretty good-sized jobs that on the onset of starting the job and the contract, there was an agreement made that the money would be in escrow. Now, when you went to work, the money was not in escrow, so they didn't go to work. And this was done on two good-sized projects, and they didn't start until the money was there. And I think that, you know, that helps, perhaps, if we did business more that way. Let me see where the money is. As it is with these folks that I've been dealing with, I was made an offer, in fact, last Friday. They'll offer to pay me 75% of my pay. You go to work at the beginning of the month, and you think you're getting X amount, and then they come back and say, oh, no, take 25%. I talked to their banker. Their banker told me those people have no problem going in there and getting $200,000 right now. The amount I'm talking about is $4,000. And I'm really supportive of the bill. I think the possibility that they cannot do business. This person as well has been doing business in the state for 3 to 5 years under a different name every year, maybe 2 or 3 in the same year. So you don't, you know, people say, who are you working for? So-and-so. Oh. Then later on, they see who it is. Well, wait a minute. You know, that so-and-so, that used to be so-and-so. And so that's excellent. If they can only use one name, license, and that will also take care of some problems.
Thank you, Mary. Are there any questions of the committee in Juneau or here of Mary? Thank you, Mary. Next person up is Henry Williams. I'm sorry. Yeah, he was just an observer. I'm sorry. Okay. Bill, Philip Pleasant. Bill, would you come up and testify, state your name and affiliation, please, for the record?
Yes, my name is Phil Pleasant, and I'm Executive Director of MAC, which is Alaska Minority Contractors Incorporated. We've been watching the legislation talk to whole black contractors every day. And the small business people, they wanted me to go on record saying that they uphold the commission or the board or whatever. Historically, boards and commissions have not reflected the best interests of us. As we can see, they've designated what the board and commission should be made up of. We've never, as black folks, been able to get that kind of restriction on board and commission shall be made up of this and make some conclusion that we will be included. So we know if this board and commission is set up and it don't say that there'll be a representative from black folks, we won't have our best interest represented. So we're not in support of this legislation for a number of reasons. One is we think the legislation restricts free enterprise. If you're trying to protect the consumer, he's supposed to protect himself. He's supposed to be trying not to get around qualified people and go out here and make a shabby deal and get burnt on the end and then fired on everybody. I think that's something that state government cannot legislate. A deal that a person, if I'm going to spend $100,000, I'm going to put as much protection on me as I can. I'm not just going to go out here on the street and grab somebody off the street, spend my $100,000 and I don't even know it. Building a house to me is as serious as having an operation. I'm not going to have a doctor cut on my arms or my legs if I don't know something about it. So I think the commission is just another burden on the contractor. I know by the language in this legislation, it will restrict the people that want to come online doing new business. The way the bonding problem is now, it restricts the free marketplace by black contractors. I already know that. So with this in place, it would even more strict their involvement. So we see it as something that
established people have put together to control the marketplace. And that's where we're at.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I understand exactly what you're saying. If the person that's affected would take more attention, it's kind of like minor surgery. Minor surgery is always to the other guy. If it's on me, it's always major surgery. I don't care what it is. So I appreciate your comments on that. Any questions of Representative Furness?
You bring up a point coming to grips with the recommendation as to who would comprise the board. There was no attempt to preclude persons representing minority contractors on the board. And I would assume that it could work in there. But you do make a point that there is no representation of specifically, or there is no way of ensuring that there be a wide range of representation. If there is, on the federal level and the state level, a great amount of emphasis put upon the development of minority businesses. Perhaps this is one of the recommendations we ought to seriously look at for putting it in. So, but it's a good point, one that was an oversight.
Thank you. Any other questions of Philip?
Mr. Chairman, I have a question here from Juno. This is Representative Bussell.
Yes, Representative Bussell.
Mr. Pleasant, have you had experience in other states where perhaps they've had a better system?
Of monitoring contractors?
Yes, sir.
From Washington, yes. And I think that their system was buyer beware. I mean, if you go out here trying to beat the people that are reputable in the construction industry, you end up getting beat yourself. I mean, if you go to a used car lot, the guy's always selling a shabby car, and you know about it, or you don't know nothing about it, you don't buy from him. But when you tell a guy, I can't go out here and make a deal with my neighbor to build his house unless I got all this up, hey, that's counterproductive. I mean, we got a lot of black folks in the community that can't work for the contractors that are going down. So if we don't develop some for ourselves, then we won't be working and we won't be in the construction industry. And we're known throughout history as being builders, okay? And if you look at the scope across Alaska, if you go on any of these jobs, you very rarely see a black contractor, general or sub. So we know that this year, from the makeup of the commission, is not going to benefit us. And we know it's just going to be one more thing on our backs. If they have another, one more requirement, we need to have a riot because we can't get involved as it is.
Mr. President, in other states that I'm familiar with, if I was to make a statement that operate better or maybe offer more all-around protection both for builder and consumer, because that's what we're really talking about here, both directions, it seems to me that most of the responsibility for inspection and enforcement is put on serving utilities, such as water utilities and electric utilities, certificate of occupancies aren't issued by local agencies such as Yankee's Building Department until sub-tier work has been satisfactorily completed and signed off by those inspection agencies. That system doesn't allow for discrimination against small contractors, large contractors, black contractors, white contractors, native contractors, or any contractor. It's based strictly on performance, and the inspector doesn't really need to know who's there or ever see who's on the job.
Yeah, but the commission does. The commission knows who the contractor is when he applies for a license. And those are the people that we, in general, don't get the nod from to participate.
Well,
those are the people that look over us and don't deal with the needs that we have. Because we're not around the table when the things are laid out.
I guess I'm speaking about a status quo in the issuance of licenses and an operating maybe that committee or this committee taking a look at trying to beef up enforcement from various agencies that serve utilities to a job instead of forming this commission. I guess that's what I was asking. Do you think that's a better attack?
I think the best way to attack it, on my understanding, is when you get a permit, before you can perform that portion of the work or go to the next portion, an inspector is supposed to okay it, put his name on the line or whatever. Okay? Now, that's the agreement between whoever the homeowner or whoever buys the permit has to be enforced. If that's not done, you can't come back and I'm a contractor, I'm trying to get by, and you say this is okay, and then you come back later on and say it ain't okay, and when in fact you told me let's try to get by and do this, or you went and got somebody that's out here every day doing it. But you rest back here in the crowd and got somebody to give you a better deal than a reputable builder out here. That's your own fault for trying to beat the system. That's the same thing with me when I speed down the road rushing somewhere and I get a ticket. I tried to beat the system, so I'm going to be paid, charged for that. So that's what the homeowner got to look for. When you make a deal, I know all the bids that my guys bid, they put in a proposal. If it's acceptable to the contractor, then they sit down and say, well, then you got to have this to protect me. And I say, well, I don't want to have that to protect you. I'm going to put this to protect me. And that's the kind of thing that you come to. I know people nowadays are not spending hundreds of thousands of dollars building and don't have no protection on their money. I know contractors and builders that don't pay all the money so a guy can run out on it until he says, okay, this is okay, we'll sign a deal, and here's your money. I don't know how a homeowner can get beat by a builder and he's paying him. I know I ain't going to go through cars and buy a loaf of bread and get home and know that it's rotten. I'm going to buy the bread if I know it's a good product and I know I can take it back. So I'm going to put that in writing. I'm going to have it enforced. I'm going to go to an attorney. I'm going to have all of those things done. The state cannot regulate those manipulations.